Following the false missile alert, a story made the rounds on social media about people who were kicked off a city bus. Oahu Transit Service President and General Manager Roger Morton says he was never able to get to the bottom of this and verify the story. But that got us to thinking not just about what happens to bus users, but the very vulnerable users of the handy van. Charlotte Townsend is a vice president of Paratransit Services and a longtime advocate for the disabled, who also happens to be wheelchair bound.
If my driver started caring about the alert from our passengers, because our drivers do not carry cell phones that they're supposed to operate during the course of their work assignment. So passengers were informing the drivers that they got this alert and what's going to happen and any details that they had. So the drivers didn't know. So their routine is to pull over, call dispatch here. Dispatch wasn't aware of the alert either, since they have no access to cell phones. So we then called Central Control, which is the bus, which is adjacent to our property, and they started calling to emergency management, trying to get an explanation as to what was going on. In the meantime, our drivers on the road were pulling off, waiting for dispatch to give them direction on what to do. It took a while to get any response. Central Control wasn't able to get through to emergency management, so we started to implement an existing policy that we have regarding alerts in general, like a tsunami alert or anything, trying to communicate with our drivers. By the time we started to do that, the alert was canceled, and so our drivers proceeded to take their passengers to their destinations. Now, I got no reports or any incidents where passengers were unduly upset or felt they had to get off immediately. And part of that, I think, was the delay in really understanding what the alert was all about.
Well, now that we know what's happened, what has changed going forward?
Well, company-wide, which would include the bus and the handy van, we're looking at a policy specific to this type of alert. But within our own area of paratransit, I'm trying to identify for them what does it mean to secure in place. And there is a lot of misunderstanding about what that term meant. So we're reviewing that with our operators at this point. And we're trying to, management is trying to come up with places that we can identify where our drivers can go to should an alert like this occur, following the recommendations of a concrete building to get people inside. It would take, unfortunately, longer than 15 minutes, which is our window, to get our wheelchair passengers off the van. So to unload them into a protected facility would be very difficult. So we're looking at in place being things like under Nimitz Highway or on Nimitz Highway, under the freeway, I should say, into the tunnels, the Poly H3 Likelike, into trying to name facilities or places throughout the island that should our handy van be close to those areas, that they would automatically go there. Giving a name or a place to our drivers that they can think of, but most of them thought securing in place meant to go home and stay home. So I think by having a better understanding of what the word means and places that they could go to shelter down until we get further direction is where we're at currently. And then the policy will be redrafted, or actually drafted, because we never had one to begin with for this type of alert.
How many drivers you have out on the road every day? You know, how many vans are on our streets?
We have approximately 170 vans a day out. I figured we had between 40 and 50 vans on the road with passengers during the time of the alert.
And we're talking about servicing a segment of the population that is vulnerable,
right,
because of their physical disabilities. And I don't know what the average time is to unload a passenger on a wheelchair in one of those vans. Is it
about 10 minutes? 10 to 12 minutes, depending on the size and the vehicle.
Right. And so if the warning says you have 15 minutes, you've got to find a place to drive to quickly.
Right. And that's why we're trying to plant the seed in their head about what kind of locations would be appropriate, so they could make that decision on the spot, pending where they are when the alert is issued.
So what was going through your mind when you got the alert? that morning?
When I went to the alert, I got a call from a family member who was kind of panicked, and I just said, I don't hear any sirens. I'm that old that I remember doing alerts under the desk in school. If you don't hear a siren, don't worry about it. And I went, kissed my husband goodbye, and we went back to sleep. And about a few seconds later, I jumped up because I had to worry about my drivers. And then I was on the path to communicate with my drivers and paratransit. But my initial thought was to go back to bed.
Well, you didn't know if it was a real thing, I guess, right?
Yeah, I didn't know if it was a real thing. I did get the alert. But, you know, as I mentioned, I'm kind of programmed by the alert signal and what the different tones of the alert mean growing up with that, you know, every first working day of the month. When I did not hear that, I just directed my family to wait it out, and then I started on my job.
So going forward, you've now identified this need for a policy to put in place, identify
yes.
areas where the drivers could go too quickly to get to shelter.
Mm-hmm. It'll be an overall policy for, like I said, both the bus and handy van, but it'll be different as far as how we implement that, because on the bus, people apparently want to get off the bus and go on their own way, whereas for our paratransit, we'd have to keep them contained.
And this policy of not allowing the drivers to have their cell phones with them, I'm sure it discourages texting and calling when they should be
yes.
attention on the road. But we talked to other industries, the hotel folks, and I guess they're wondering if their housekeepers should have their phones for those types of alerts, or if, as an example, if there was an active shooter on a hotel floor, you know, that they would at least have some means mm-hmm. of calling for help. Is there any thought about reconsidering?
Well, we haven't not thought of the idea of cell phones. Many of my drivers have their own personal cell phones with them throughout the day. They're just not able to use them for work purposes. So
oh,
I think we need to address that because they do carry them, the majority of my drivers do. So I think it's going to be a discussion point on the table between the bus and us as to what our formal policy is going to be about that. But now, especially that we have on our communication tool on the vans that able to communicate through that tablet and do massive text to our drivers, that's somewhat of a safety cushion for us, so we can get the alert out to them a lot faster. But we have not rejected the idea of them carrying a cell phone that they have permission to use at certain times.
Okay, but certainly this missile mistake is causing everyone to reevaluate their systems and to ask, how ready are we?
It had an impact to us, and we're taking it very seriously. We're part, you know, of the solution when it comes to other alerts like tsunami and transportation and getting people to safe places. So, you know, we're part of that system, and you know, it's just coincidental, if not, well, maybe that's not the right word, but normally central control would be on the list of emergency management and the police to notify us on any kind of alert like that, and we didn't get anything.
Okay. Well, Charlotte Townsend, thank you for joining us and sharing this. Gives us another glimpse into the needs of this community when an emergency arises like this. But thanks again.
Yes. Well, you're very welcome. It's keeping us on our toes, that's for sure.
That was Charlotte Townsend, Vice President of Paratransit Services, sharing the changes that are being made as a result of last month's false missile alert. We're continuing to hear from you about the Hawaii Emergency Management Agency's ability to accurately notify the public of a threat. Gail from Honolulu wrote in, at the risk of beating a dead horse, I'd like to hear about the decision-making process on why the patch to add a ballistic missile warning was added to an antiquated alert system in the first place. What mainland software consultant convinced Miyagi that this was needed? In addition, we haven't heard from intelligent experts about the destructive capability of NK warheads, nor NK's launch delivery systems, both of which I understand have very little probability of success. Hope you revisit this topic again as we learn more.
And Donald Chalk wrote, I had hoped that the Aloha State would have been past the pointing finger stage a couple of weeks ago, and instead focus on the opportunity to learn from our mistakes and make the system better. It would be fascinating to do a comparative study of Japan's response to their false alarm incident and see if they have as much blaming behavior going on among the public, media, and politicians. Thanks for listening. And here are a few of your comments from our talkback line.
Hello, this is Judy Eagle on Maui. And with regard to trusting Hawaii Emergency Management, sure, generally, hey, everything is getting reported as an emergency. At any rate, to have one individual not weeded out, not separated to doing non-urgent tasks, that is a concern. So presumably supervision will be a key to this also. Aloha.
I don't believe enough's been done to address the situation of the emergency management system in Hawaii. In any other organization, the people responsible would have been immediately terminated, and a full investigation by a third-party independent source would have been undergone. What we got was foot-dragging, tepid explanations, and we still don't know what happened. It's comical, and it makes us look like Keystone Cops.
I think that maybe the wrong person was fired. They should investigate the supervisor who gave that warning, exercise, this is not a drill. That kind of behavior is reckless and illogical. That person should be fired.
Thanks for sharing your stories with us. You can call our talkback line and leave your comments. Here's the number, 808-792-8217. You can also email us at talkback@hawaiipublicradio.org.